This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fan. Today, I am Reginald Atatula. Actually, every day I'm Reginald Atatula, but I'm not Kevin or Corey. Both of those guys are out. You still have famous Mike Bassick here, and it might sound a little different because we are not at the studios. We are actually at the Dallas Card Show. We are in Allen, Texas, at the Marriott Dallas Allen and Convention Center on 75. Come join us. What is the address again? 777?
Waters Creek Boulevard.
There we go.
Off of 75, Bethany's the exit. Especially if you have off today, and I get it, there could be family in town or whatever, but a lot of times, Friday, this is a school day while we're doing this, stuff like that, but it feels like driving the highways, a lot of people aren't working today. So if you're not working, come on out here. If you love sports, you don't even have to love sports cards, but if you kind of love sports, just to take a look at all the history of just kind of what people have put on paper, Topps and other companies and stuff, it's just really fun to come out here. You get to meet a whole new group of sports fans, and how, in a weird way, I'm part of this community is we sport at times through our cards. So maybe, I mean, I'm sure there's people out here that gamble on games, but kind of sports cards at times is a little bit of having fun and gambling on a player that you've decided in the future possibly is going to be a great player and their card values aren't at what you think they are.
Right. I have a Tolo friend that I was talking to yesterday on the 4th. His name is Hong. Shout out to Hong. And he was like, look, Omax is going to be a player, believe me. And what you're saying, if you wanted to really put your money where your mouth is, you'd go get a rookie card and say, this is going to be valuable. So I think in that way, I see what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You did say that, you know, it's a school day. It is in the middle of July. Or I guess
I'm saying it's not a school day, but usually it is on a day. So we've been out at the Dallas Card Show on Friday, but it'd be tough in April because kids are in school. But if you're obviously not in school today, unless you really have a kid that struggles with discipline or they can't pass second grade.
And sometimes they need it.
Yeah. Then they're in summer school. But as long as they're not in summer school, they have the day off today. Instead of them playing video games, why don't you take your kid out here and show them some history of sports cards and maybe they'll really get into it. And maybe they like Pokemon or something.
Yeah.
And you can find Pokemon or anime cards or whatever those people collect on those things.
And Mike, I'm sure for you, like, these are the types of things that you had quality time with your father and now with your sons as well. Like, this is how you pass the game on, I imagine, in some ways as well.
86 was the first year I got into sports cards. So I was 8 years old. And I smartly bought all of the baseball cards you could possibly buy because they made literally, and I'm not making this number up, a million or more of each card of baseball cards. Well, they didn't make a whole bunch of basketball cards because everybody thought basketball was stupid.
Right.
And cards were the dumbest thing ever on a basketball player. So Fleer was like, look, literally nobody was making cards for the most part. There was a company making them, but it was weird. It's called Star. From 1981, Topps was like, basketball cards are the dumbest, worthless thing in the world. Let's quit basketball.
Sure.
And all the other companies at the time, Fleer and Donruss, are like, we're not picking up stupid basketball. Everybody thinks it's stupid and nobody likes it. And so in 1986, Fleer said, all right, you know what? We'll take this stupid thing called basketball because Larry Bird and Magic Johnson seem to be pretty damn good at this and people are watching, and we're going to take the NBA Finals games and instead of playing them in the middle of the day in the summertime, we're going to play them at night and put them on primetime television. This was after 84, so in 86, Fleer jumps in. But the cards didn't sell well.
Mm-hmm.
Still, people weren't into basketball cards at all. So those cards are worth a lot more than baseball cards in 1986 or even in 1987 because Fleer was probably making, I'm guesstimating here, and it sounds like a lot, but they probably out in the marketplace, and a lot of them are ruined, but probably made $250,000 Michael Jordan rookie cards.
And that's a completely different population.
Over a million. Yeah. I think, honestly, in 1989, I think like Griffey's rookie card, there might be 3 million upper deck. And I'm not making that number up. Like literally 3 million upper deck Griffey cards. So anyways, if I would have been like, you know what? I love basketball too. I should buy a whole bunch of these 1986 Fleer basketball cards. That would have been a much better decision as a kid.
Well, you can make some great decisions today. Again, we are at the Dallas Card Show in Allen. Come out and say hello to famous Mike Bassett. But also you have an opportunity over the course of this weekend to maybe see Gino Petrolli. He's going to be out here later today, 6 p.m. over the weekend. Such names as Bob Lilly, great Cowboy, Ian Kinsler, Kevin Mensch, Patrick Mahomes Sr. will be out here. Yeah,
if we just leave the senior off, people will be like, whoa, I'm coming out here.
Yeah, I could do the Dallas Card Show aside, but I also don't want our Tolos to be disappointed. You know, although, look, Patrick Mahomes Sr. is a character. I think you want to meet that man.
He's a good dude.
And he was a solid baseball player in his own right as well.
10 years, I believe, of service.
And then, Saturday, tomorrow, is going to be a big-time Texas Rangers day. If you're a Rangers fan and a card collector, you can have your fill as Dane Dunning, Leody Taveras, Josh Boris, and Travis Jankowski will all be out here. So, I mean, look, a lot of great names will be here over the course of this weekend, including Mike. You're going to be out here not just today, but
I'll be out here all day today. I'll be out here pretty much all day tomorrow. Sunday's 50-50 for me. I'll kind of see what we have family-wise and stuff like that. But if you're wondering about the Texas Rangers, like, aren't they playing tomorrow? They are. So after the game is over, they're kind of getting a caravan and coming over here. So the four current Texas Rangers on the team after the game will come out here. I'm going to guess around 8 p.m. If the game's at 3, I think Saturday's Ranger game is at 3. But if it's at 1, then they'll be out here about 6. If it's 3, they'll be here about at 8 p.m. So you can meet some of your world champion Texas Rangers who are struggling to win baseball games.
Yeah. I thought for a moment, Mike, that this team had found a little bit of a glimpse of what was last year's 2023 World Series champion. And hopefully they can get back to that. We'll have an opportunity to talk about your Rangers. We'll talk Cowboys, of course. I know some people are excited because both me and you love basketball. We will talk about these Mavericks. But right now, because we're at the Dallas Card Show, I wanted to go here. On Instagram, for me, I tried not to get into the Reels thing, but unfortunately it drew me in because that's how social media works. And one of the Reels that I'll see from time to time is a gentleman who will take a baseball card and look at the moment on the card and find that moment in the actual game that it happened in by looking at the surroundings and things of that nature. And that got me thinking, Mike, if you could have one card, a card commemorating one single moment in sports history, what moment would you choose? That's the Franklin Injury Attorney text line, 877-881-1053, to let us know what moment you would choose. But Mike, I mean, you are a lover of sports, in particular moments. Yeah. I think they stick with you really well. And you also love these baseball, and these, not just baseball cards, but all these sports cards. Is there a moment that you think of that comes to mind? And I think we also talked about this a little bit. It feels like that's not necessarily the way that cards are made as of right now, thinking about the moments over the player.
There's a lot of moments that are captured through photographs, and somehow Topps and Panini's the other company that makes basketball and football cards, that they do such a bad job at capturing the major moments in sports and then putting them on a card, especially, let's just say, a limited edition, or we can call it in this industry, a short printed card. So I have no clue how Corey Seager's home run in Game 1 of the World Series wasn't his short-printed Topps 2024 card.
Right.
Him screaming or the follow-through of his swing, you could get either one of those.
I think it has to be
and
the yell.
You make – those cards would sell – like, there's not enough cards for Ranger fans. And so they'd be so premium and so wanted. So they would be printed to – their short-printed cards are like – 200 to 300 cards. So I don't want it to be the card that they make 150,000 of. I want it to be a card that's sought after, like, that's the moment.
Yeah.
Not that there's just one of them, but there's like 200 to 1,000 of them.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, every Ranger fan, and they did the research on this. I was in a meeting a month or so ago with the Rangers. Approximately around the world, there's 14.3 Ranger fans. 14.3 million. Sorry, not just 14.3.
It's weird to have a 14.3
million Ranger fans in this world that at least in some way, shape, or form on social media or some way have a Ranger logo, Ranger fan, and so they're counted as a Ranger fan, which is the seventh most in the major leagues starting the 2024 season. And yet they don't capture these moments. And so I'll go back in history. How a company like Upper Deck, who had somewhat of an exclusive with Michael Jordan back in 1998-99.
Yeah.
How they don't get his final shot against the Utah Jazz
yes.
on a card, and it be the card that everybody looks at is like, yeah, there's the rookie cards and everything, but that card that is short printed to 1,000, let's just say, everybody who's a Michael Jordan fan would be like, I want that card of him shooting the shot over Byron Russell.
Yeah.
And yet, none of the card companies could figure out how to put that card or how to put that picture on a card and make it something special. So I do love cards. I think the people at Topps and then the people at Panini really struggle with this, that they can't figure out moments on cards. Every card can't have a moment, but there are moments that need to be captured on a card that people would want those moments
right.
more. Now, they do have things called Topps Now. I won't get into that, but anyways, that is, they do a very bad job, but I would want the Michael Jordan over Byron Russell shot.
That absolutely came to mind, and it came to us on the fan text, the Frankel injury attorney text line. But this also got me thinking, because a text came in from the I must have lost it at this point, but basically pointing to the idea of the 2-4 Mike Vick, when he made a couple of Vikings players run into each other. And so for me, I immediately thought, like you, the Corey Seager moment where he hits the home run and the emotion that he typically does not show in a big way just floods out of him. And I think it makes a great picture, but there's also a moment. But those two things don't always have to be aligned. Sometimes the moment and the stakes of the moment are huge. But then in other instances, it's just like this moment was picturesque. And I feel like Mike Vick having a couple of Vikings run together is more about the picture, the image of it, than, hey, there's some other moments where people talk about, you know, the idea of Barry Bonds breaking the home run record, which I anticipated coming in because obviously you happened to be in the stadium during that.
Yeah, I will say with Barry Bonds, the tough thing about him at the time is Barry Bonds was not part of the Players Association.
Ah.
So you could not have a picture of another player in any card or any photograph with him. So that would have made it a little bit more difficult. I think you could have, but the shot would have had to be so up close. It would have been tough to see that this is the moment, because he refused to sign the players agreement because he felt like he deserved more than just, it's thrown into a pot. And a lot of the superstars say, hey, this is great for people like me.
Right.
I'm already making millions of dollars on my contract. This pot, instead of getting $1 million for my name and likeness, I'll take the $75K that everybody gets. But Barry didn't feel that way. In fact, at one point, Michael Jordan didn't feel that way. That's why he wasn't on any of the video games.
Right. And I mean, there was didn't they print out a separate video game with just his likeness at one point?
And then you had to take out, it would say like Chicago on it, you know, or whatever, because they couldn't put the team name. I mean, I would love a portrait card of this, like in 2015 as LeBron left the Heat, and it just says not three, as you have Wade, Bosch, and LeBron on the stage for not one, not two, not three.
I hadn't even thought about vindictive cards.
Like just fun cards, right?
That's hilarious.
Because if you're kind of a hater, like you could put out, Panini could put out like almost anti-Cowboy cards.
Yeah. Like,
and I'm sure that non-Cowboy fans, and there's plenty of them, it would be funny for them to have a picture of Dak throwing another interception in the first half of a playoff game.
Some other ones that come up, the Josh Boers glove spike at the end when he clinched the World Series.
Yeah.
Nolan Ryan versus Robin Ventura on a card.
Yeah.
That'd be really fun. I know someone else mentioned a few baseball cards. I feel like obviously baseball lines up.
Yeah.
Someone mentioned Joe Carter walk-off home run.
Yeah.
But
There is a card, and it wasn't even a completed pass. Do you remember the pass in the Super Bowl where Patrick Mahomes is almost
like horizontal?
Yeah, and he's almost, he's like about 6 inches away from the ground, and he's just releasing the ball. There actually is a card of that, and it's such a cool-looking card.
Oh, my. Like, I would want that.
It's not a moment in history that's like a great touchdown pass. It's just a moment of how did he throw this ball? How did he get this off? So I don't know why. I would love to talk to people at Topps. Topps is taking over the world when it comes to cards. Panini, I know people there at Panini. They're nice people, but for the most part, they're going to be out of the sports game here pretty soon. And I would love to know why, over a 70-plus year history, you guys have struggled so much to capture great moments in sports.
All right, so Mike, you are a huge Dallas Mavericks fan, and so there's a few that have come in for Dallas Mavericks. From the 817, they say Dirk hitting the lefty layup with his tongue out in the finals.
Yeah.
And then there was another one, which was Luka Doncic in the bubble hitting that step back three. That
bang,
you
bang.
Exactly. What Mavericks moment, is there one Mavericks moment that stands above the rest for you that you'd want on a court?
I would only do this because of as a kid. Is when Rolando Blackman is screaming confidence, baby, confidence.
Ooh.
when he made the free throw in 87 in Seattle to send the All-Star game into overtime. Believe it or not, kids and young men and women, the NBA players used to really care about the All-Star game and play really hard in it, and it meant a lot to them. And that was a big moment for me as a kid, as Rolando was my favorite player at that point, because they had traded my first ever favorite player, Dell Ellis, for a future NBA referee, Al Wood.
Yes. Yes, they did do that, Mike. It's the KNC Masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fan. I've been slacking them on pimping as I am filling in for Kevin and Corey. Kevin is out of town. Corey is allegedly sick. We don't necessarily have very much on that. I'll do some reporting there. However, it's also a Friday, which means it's a shout-out Friday. So go ahead and text those in as well. On the text line, 877-881-1053. I'll do my best to shout you out as we are live from the Dallas Card Show in Allen. Come out and see us. Say hello. Get a look at some fantastic selection of cards out here. I've been impressed and amazed. We'll talk more about that as well as we go along this afternoon. But let's go here with the Cowboys. Dak Prescott has been seen in a walking boot. Should we be concerned? We'll talk about that next on The Fan.
Second and five. At the Detroit 8, 7.5 minutes in the game. Snap to Prescott, standing and looking and throwing right to the end zone. Brandon Cooks, touchdown Cowboys. Perfect route, perfect throw. Cowboys regain the lead.
It's the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Reginald Atatula in for Kevin and Corey. Mike Bassick always here with you as always. Happy Friday wherever you are. We are at the Dallas Card Show in Allen, 777 Waters Creek Trail.
Yes.
Or Boulevard.
I think it's Waters.
I always do that.
You've messed me up now by saying that. But I will say, if you go to DallasCardShow.com.
Waters Creek Boulevard.
You're going to find a whole bunch of information there. But come on out, say hi to us. I'll be out here all day, but we'd love for you to come out from some point from 10 to 2 while we're doing the show. But if not, I'll be walking around the show till probably like 6 p.m. tonight.
A lot of fantastic folks getting involved with the program on the Franklin & Franklin Injury Attorney text line, 877-881-1053. We were just talking about what moments in sports we would like to see commemorated on a card. Willie Mays, the catch, obviously comes up. And then also the Rougned Odor, maybe the best right hand that I've ever seen thrown in sports outside of combat sports.
That would be a very cool one.
I would absolutely love to see that. But, yeah, remember, it's a shout-out Friday. You can text in, and I will do my best to shout you out. This was kind of trending. I know Sean and RJ talked about it, or Sean and Bobby, to be specific, talked about it quite a bit. As over the holiday, I guess I was going to say holiday weekend, but not quite. But
it is the holiday weekend. I saw the traffic. It's definitely a holiday.
Yeah, you guys are definitely out of work. That's one thing I definitely say. But Dak Prescott, the quarterback of the Cowboys, has been spotted wearing a protective boot on his right foot. This kind of just popped up on Twitter, I want to say either yesterday or maybe the day before, possibly. And, I mean, the question that needs to be asked is how concerned should we be? Because, look, Dak Prescott, star of this team. He is the quarterback of this team, most important position. And he's taken some knocks, right? He's had some injuries. We've talked a lot about his mobility and what that means to this team. And there was no primer for seeing this. It wasn't like we knew that Dak Prescott was dealing with something or other. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, we just see a picture of the quarterback of this team on vacation with a walking boot on. I think he was like at a marina of some sorts.
Why? Let me ask you this question.
Yes, sir.
I think it's tough because being a celebrity, and he is, you have to watch yourself every time you step out of your house, which stinks.
Yeah.
It really does for the people that are that famous. If Dak
like
is
you,
telling
right?
the truth, and it's just because of the deep sea fishing thing, because he's saying, well, I mean, it swelled up last time I went deep sea fishing, so I put on a boot. Now, my whole thing is, putting on a boot does not help out with swelling. I am not a doctor. I am married to one, and I don't even need to ask her that question. If I have on a boot, it's not going to make it not swell.
Yeah, that's more structural typically,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, and so,
or at least protective of what could be an injury.
My next thing is when he walked out of the house, why didn't he have on, he had on a boatin shoe or whatever you call the, you know what I'm saying? Like he had on one of those kind of what we call boat shoes or whatever.
Yeah,
the other.
Looked like a little loafer on the left foot. And the
why didn't he
right
wear
foot.
His loafers to the boat and then put on the boot when he gets out into the ocean and so nobody sees him in the boot? To me, it's not like, oh, he's not going to play this year, anything like that. He's been dealing with this major ankle injury and playing great. In fact, probably, from what I understand, exceeded expectations on how he's played on that ankle. But this is concerning that he felt like, or a doctor told him, you need to be wearing a boot right now.
Yeah, so Dallas Morning News reporting that this is dealing with a sprained ankle of some sorts, which, look, we all, I mean, if you've existed and if you've maybe even been any level of active, you've probably sprained an ankle at some point. But, the, I mean, we've gotten all sorts of different reporting. I know that Clarence Hill of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram got direct confirmation from Dak Prescott that he's fine, right? That it's, just, you know, like you were mentioning earlier, that, you know, he when he goes on the boat, he feels like they're swelling and this was maybe a preventative measure. It feels like we've gotten a lot of different answers.
Yeah.
None of them necessarily exactly the same, but all of them going to the idea of this isn't a big deal.
Right.
And so I wonder if people are in that place or inclined to be in that place. And Mike, I'm going to be completely honest. I have a little bit of skepticism with it because not necessarily because I believe that Dak Prescott is some level of liar, what have you, but
right.
The Cowboys organization hasn't always been the most forthcoming with us when it comes to some of these injuries, particularly with Dak Prescott. And, I mean, look, I understand why you wouldn't, right? You're not necessarily
right.
going to want everything put out on Front Street for yourself.
Right.
But I go back to when he originally had the foot injury and, you know, they had a surgery. And then we come back around and we find out that after a whole bunch of, like, hubbub about the foot, right, we come back around and, oh, no, there was a second surgery that was done after there was a lot of shooing that idea away, right? Like, we've had information, particularly about Dak Prescott, withheld from us before.
100%.
And so I'm wondering, like, is this more cause for concern than people inside the Cowboys organization would want us to believe?
The correct answer here is we'll find out.
Sure.
I know that sounds obviously like Mickey, but it is
we'll find out.
Right answer. We'll find out in 3 weeks on July 25th, I believe is their first mini workout.
Yes.
If everything looks like he has been, he's never been the same since that. He's been good. Don't get me wrong. He almost won the MVP last year. I'm not taking a shot at Dak right now. Is Dak has shown he can play on that ankle and play well on that ankle, yet he's not the same. He doesn't move the same since that injury. Here we are approximately 4 years later. And you wonder how much maybe that is. It was two major surgeries. They had to redo it. So you look at it and you go, how much more does that ankle have? And I think it's different. But from what I understand from that surgery he had on his ankle is, I'm just going to compare it to, it's not the same, but compare it to Tommy John surgery. And Tommy John surgery, they'll tell you, you have about 3 to 7 years. They thought seven, but it's getting worse. And that's why they're coming up with a new surgery, Dr. Meister, to hope that they can make it a longer lasting situation. I'm just throwing out a number. We think it has 5 years, or we think it has 8 years until, like, we don't know if he does play on this, how much pressure it can take. And so it's bugging him. There's no way. If it wasn't bugging him at all, he wouldn't be wearing a boot. So it is bugging him. But in 3 to 4 weeks, we'll really know where he's at. They can hide the truth from us right now, or they really are telling the truth.
Sure, that's all.
But you can't hide it on July 25th.
And, I mean, look, all of the reports that we've gotten from very trusted sources around Cowboys media are pointing to the idea that, you know, whatever the reasoning that's being thrown out of there, ultimately the belief is that he will absolutely be ready to go when they get to training camp. And so that is, as you mentioned, what we are getting to. But someone here on the text line is linking this a little bit further, Mike, and I'm interested to see your thought process on it. From the 214, they said maybe they, meaning the Cowboys, knew something about his foot prior to this, and that's why they haven't extended him yet. And, I mean, look, you don't have to get to that place to find reasons as to why that extension hasn't been done. I mean, like, Dak Prescott has all the leverage in the world. The Cowboys have notoriously not been the best in these negotiations, and they've often drug things out if you can always lean on the idea of Jerry Jones using the phrase deadlines make deals, right? And so you can always – you can get to the reasons why Dak Prescott has not been signed without even going to this place. But if there is the idea that maybe there's an additional level of injury that maybe we don't understand – is that feasible in your mind that that could factor into why there hasn't been a deal done with Dak Prescott yet?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, I agree with the person texting in, but then I think they gave him that huge contract when they didn't know if he could really play football.
Right.
And he did. He was able to play it at a very high level. And so they've done it before where they didn't care at all about the ankle. They just believed it was going to be good, and they were right. They bet on it, and they were right. But I do wonder, this is where I'm wondering too, is if the Cowboys are looking at this going, why should we commit three more years to, let's say, Dak Prescott at the highest number in the NFL, which no matter what, he's going to be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL after he signs his contract.
Yeah.
Like, whether it's for 2 months, whether it's for 1 year, he will be the highest paid quarterback, whether it's with the Cowboys or without the Cowboys. But yeah, I do wonder if the Cowboys are like, why commit if we know how jacked up that ankle was, what the recovery has been, how he's overcome it, but yet, and I don't know this, but he still has to wear a boot at times because of how bothersome it is in just real life. In just walking from your wherever he was staying at to the boat dock to having that boot while he's on the boat, something's up. But maybe it's just so minor that he deals with this all the time. It's just one of the first times somebody publicly captured him wearing a boot in the middle of the day in the off season.
Right. And I think that one of the, you know, contextual things that it's worth noting, because I want to be as responsible as possible while talking about this, is remembering just how much physical, you know, rehabilitation is necessary for athletes in their off season. Like, these guys are pushing themselves to the max. And football in particular, I like to call it the car crash sport, because it's, you know, everybody's literally trading on their bodies in a way that's different. But you are a former professional athlete, Mike. I mean, just from your experience, like, what are the types of things that you can think of? Or is there anything that is kind of akin to this that you would see maybe in baseball, of like, if people had seen more of this, they would be more concerned than probably they need and be?
Probably if you got to go into, let's just take today for example. Now we're in the season, but I'm going to use in season for example. If you got to be in the training room from about now, 11 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. and see everything that the Rangers go through to get ready for a game, you'd be like, I don't know if that guy's going to play, or I don't know this and that. But it's just like, hey, whatever I need to do, you know, to a point to be able to play. In the off season, guys dealing with rehabbing injuries, you're kind of like, well, okay, I can see him rehabbing. But I will say this, it's for the most part, you know, you get the elbow brace off. I'm going to call it an elbow brace after a while after Tommy John surgery, not 4 years after Tommy John surgery.
We saw our friend Derek Holland.
Yeah, you don't have to wear that in the off season, you know, just to make sure that it stays stable in the off season here and there. So I do think this, the reason that this really is a story, if people, and I get it, some Cowboy fans are probably like, oh, it's nothing. And hopefully it is kind of nothing, but it is something. We're not taking pictures right now of Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, whoever you think is the great quarterbacks. They're not all wearing a boot on a foot right now. They're all, you know, in their off season, getting prepared for 2 to 3 weeks from now to start training camp, and they're not all in an arm sling or a boot just to make sure they don't have swelling in a certain area of their body.
Maybe we found an answer here from the 903. He was probably drinking and just put the wrong shoe on, you know? Happens all the time.
I was like, man, he's confused on what a cowboy boot is.
We're the KNC Masterpiece on this Friday here at the Dallas Card Show on 105.3 The Fan. Thanks for hanging out with us. It is a shout-out Friday where someone was asking, should we call this the Mr. Piece, as in MR, because Mike and Reggie?
Yeah, sure.
It's a possibility. I'll think about that. I'll see if I like the way that sounds. Again, you can come out and hang out with us at the Dallas Card Show. We're out here in Allen. I'm here till 2. Mike hanging around. He wants to do a little wheeling and dealing with the cards. But coming up next here on the KNC Masterpiece, it's time for a little baseball nuggets.
We thought we had some hopium with the Texas Rangers, and then we had a little vacation, and we're back to where we started next.
KNC Masterpiece here, live from the Dallas Card Show in Allen. I'm Reginald Adetula filling in for Kevin and Corey. Mike Bassick, of course, still here being famous. In fact, right now, I believe he is opening a box. We're trying to, but
Topps did a great job of cellophaning it, but I just got it open. But
you know what?
We have from our friends at RJ Dukes. We've been out at their shop before, and RJ Dukes, they're in McKinney, right? McKinney is the city. I always get confused because it's a little bit past Allen there, but we've done shows at their shop. They're amazing. They donate a lot to Peace-a-thon, which is the day before Thanksgiving, where we raise a lot of money for help me out here. Why am I?
My possibilities. Absolutely, yeah.
So he gave me a box of Topps Tier 1 that just came out this week. So I'm going to open it up right now. So if you're on YouTube or Twitch right now.
Always join us.
It can be like an unbelievably great card. These are expensive. Oh, and so it's packed again.
It's like packed. All right.
Pack upon pack. But we do need to get into baseball nuggets.
Let's do that right now.
Is it brought to you by Twin Peaks? Eats, drinks, and scenic views?
I believe so.
Even if it isn't, it is now.
That's right.
Twin Peaks, you just got free advertising.
Shout out to Twin Peaks,
or you did pay for it, and I rightfully said it.
Woo!
Okay, so in this Topps Tier 1 pack, real quick, we'll see congratulations, autograph card of J.J. Bleday.
Okay.
An autograph card of J.T. Realmuto. These are like all unbelievable cards because here is a patch of Cody Bellinger, and then the last card is a card numbered 4 of 25 of our own Corey Seager.
There you go.
So very cool pack right there. Let me get into baseball nuggets.
Did we win?
It's a solid pack, but these are expensive. Topps Tier 1 are expensive for four cards.
They look like quality cards. They've got a certain thickness to them.
So we wanted Hopium after beating Baltimore on the road, and then you win against San Diego 7-0 their first game. You're like, this is it. This is our championship team. We're about to make the turnaround that you need because you got to get to close to 500 by the All-Star break. And then July 3rd and July 4th, you don't win. Yesterday, I thought Max Scherzer had a really good game. But it's amazing because when you lose 3-1, I had a couple questions. I was at my in-laws in Glen Rose. Shout out to Squaw Valley Golf Course. I played on July 3rd, the afternoon out there. It was super hot, but the course was in good shape. I don't know what Max Scherzer could have done better, except he had to throw a no-hitter. Like, what could have Max done? Because they were like, oh, how is Max? And I was like, well, he gave up a few runs, but, you know, he pitched into the seventh inning, this and that, and it's like, dang. And I'm like, well, a lot of times right now at the Rangers, we thought they were coming out of an offensive slump. And it was just, yesterday was just one game. Today could be a new game.
Right.
And maybe offensively they get going in. But this has been all year. You kind of expect 1 to 3 runs from the Rangers. That's my expectation, is if they score over 3, they've had a good offensive game. I'm just being honest. With watching the Rangers this year, if they get to 4 runs, I feel like they've had a above-average 2024 offensive game.
And that's frustrating because I thought that maybe you had broken out of it. I mean, some of this was just like various folks having slumps. But when you go to, when you have the Orioles in Baltimore and you put up 11 runs, you know, scoring multiple runs in multiple innings, it's not like you had one giant inning. It's not like it was just home runs. You ran the gamut, and then you backed it back up, you know, after a day off. You start off against the Padres, and you give them, you know, you get some runs there as well in a similar fashion. So it felt like they were finding something that ultimately just didn't carry on, and that was really frustrating for me.
We want it so bad as fans right now. We want this team to play like we saw them play last year. And when we get that 2 days in a row of them playing like it, we think we're about to see it for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And then you get the next 2 games, you lose another series. Like, this is a constant when you look at what is happening. The Padres are a solid team. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. I think the Padres will fight for a playoff spot. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. They won't win that division. But you just look at it and you go, dang, like, at what point are they going to turn it around? Because I know I'm going to Yogi Berra here, but it's getting late early.
Yeah.
We're running out of time. At this point, I know, hey, there's more games. I can talk like a baseball player too, but I'm going to talk like a fan here. You're running out of time. time is not on your side anymore. In fact, I was shocked when Kevin 2 days ago had the article from Evan Grant that this is the third worst kind of defense of a
third worst record for a championship team. Yeah,
in baseball, and like. Yeah. I didn't know it was that bad.
In the last 120 years of the World Series, this is the third worst record of a team in the next year. And so, yeah, that's the frustrating part, is that you've seen them play at a high level with largely the same guys. And, I mean, some of the guys that you trust to be, kind of your stable foundation pieces aren't even having a good time. Yeah. Marcus Semien got the night off, yeah. Which is something that he rarely does. But if you look at some of the what he's slashing, especially if you use as a particular point May 18th.
Oh, yeah.
What happened May 18th? Semien goes out into shallow right field and happens to kind of collide with Adolis Garcia. Since then, he's been batting 179. On base percentage 262, slugging 258. Like, that's a guy that you lead off with and that you depend on to be part of that offense, and he hasn't been all that great of late.
Yeah, and this reminds me of this Marcus Semien we've been watching for a month now. It was about 2 months when he signed with the Texas Rangers that this was the Marcus Semien
saw. Yeah.
For his first 2 months as a Texas Ranger. Now, he ended up breaking out of that and ended up still having a pretty good year in the end, but right now, it's just, if this team doesn't get hot, I hate saying this, they're pretty much going to be dead by the All-Star break. If they cannot, you just can't. Right now, they're lucky because of the division. They are very lucky because the Mariners are 7 games over 500 and leading the division.
They've been leaking a little bit here recently, too.
Now, the Astros are 3 games over 500. You're 6 behind the Astros. You're 8 behind the Mariners. Now, if I just stop there, this is where we can fool people. This is where you can make numbers do what they want to do. And it's a basic number. I'm not making up their 8 behind and 6 behind these two teams. But when you say, you can make up 6 games. You can make up 8 games with, 70-something to go. That is correct, 100%. When you're 39-48, you can't. You have to start winning.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you're 48-39, if you're having a year, let's say like the Boston Red Sox. Now, do I think the Red Sox are going to catch Baltimore or the Yankees? I do not. But when you're 47-39 and you're the Boston Red Sox and you're in third place and you are 5.5 back of the Yankees and you're 7.5 back of the Orioles, there's a lot more confidence in that clubhouse with the Boston Red Sox because they've won 8 more games than they've lost. When you're the Texas Rangers and you've lost 9 more games than you've won, there's a different confidence level. And so the Rangers are struggling. The way I watch them play right now, I think, gosh, are they struggling to believe that they can do it? Is there too much pressure? In a weird way, do they feel almost too much pressure to defend the title? And I will say it this way. I remember Mike Piazza got on a plane. We had just played the Montreal Expos in early to mid-September, and we won the series, and the guys were getting on the plane happy, and Piazza was pissed because he had just been in the World Series in 2000, and they had made moves for Mo Vaughn and Robbie Alomar, and it wasn't working out. We were under 500, not playing well, and then all of a sudden we had about a 5-game stretch where we played well. We were pretty much eliminated from the playoffs. It was impossible to make the playoffs. And he's like, he got on the plane and he got mad and he yelled at the team. He said, "Where were you when it mattered? Anybody can hit when nothing's on the line.
Yeah.
Anybody can put up zeros when nothing's on the line. When everything was on the line in August, you guys sucked." And so I'm talking about Mike Piazza there. And I remember being a kid. I was a rookie pretty much on that plane and taking it all in and like seeing our team leader or one of our team leaders really ticked off that all of a sudden the pressure was off.
Yeah.
Nobody cared anymore about our season. Football season was happening. We were out of the playoff race. We weren't going to win a division. We weren't going to win at the time the one wild card spot. And he was just mad that, why couldn't you guys played like this when it mattered? And it was amazing to me when, especially veteran guys, know the pressure's off.
Yeah.
There's no playoff position on the line. There's no defense of anything, defending a title or a division or anything. He felt like all of a sudden the guys finally started playing like they played, and he wanted to call them out on like, hey, you needed to play this way in August when we had a chance. And because we played so bad in August, we had no chance in September. So I look at the Rangers and I wonder, I don't know, I'm not part of the team. I get to see the guys. I'm rooting for the Texas Rangers tremendously. I want them to get out of this funk. I want to have important September baseball. But I just wonder, is there too much pressure on – are they putting so much pressure on themselves that they can't get out of their own way at times and have the at-bats that I know they're capable of having?
I'd also be super interested to hear what this friend of ours would think as he texted in. His name is Derek Holland. I think you're familiar with him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know how much he's joking with this because I know that it's something that we talk about, but the idea of the Bochy effect, right? Winning one year, losing the next. But
He did play over 500 two out of those 3 years, his team, not himself. But his team's – because I wanted to look that up a month or so ago to be like, is this common? Because I knew they didn't make the World Series the next year.
Right.
But 1 year they did play like six games. I'm going off the top of my head, like six or seven games under 500. And then the other 2 years they were over 500. They just didn't have enough wins to make the playoffs or to make the run at the World Series.
Yeah, going back, you were mentioning like, you know, the idea of being able to chase down the lead in your division. And you likened it or you kind of compared it to the Red Sox who are currently, you know, playing – their win percentage is 54%, 55% in there?
54.7.
With the Rangers, or with the Red Sox in that instance, right, you know that you're playing good baseball, that the field can fall to you.
Yeah, if we keep playing this way, we got a chance.
Right. The Rangers are playing 448 baseball right now. I mean, I did a little quick math, and I'm not Kevin Hagelin, so give me a little bit of leeway if I'm wrong here. But on this pace, with this win percentage, the Rangers would win 73 games this year. And so, like, that doesn't even feel befitting of the team that they are. And what's even more frustrating about this, Mike, for me is, and someone on the text line pointed to this, the bullpen has been pretty solid for you. I mean, all things considered, compare it to last year. Your starting pitching has been good. Some of the places where you had issues last year are not the same places where you had issue. And the strength that you had last year is now the thing that's plaguing you. That's the thing that almost makes me pull out my hair at times.
You know, you saying that, I was thinking about this the other day. So now I get to say it on the air because I have a lot of things that I think about and then forget to say on the air. Is if you would have told me all of these things – were to happen in the first 3 months of the season, offense, just specifically on the offense, I'd say, all right, so that's the floor. That's the absolute floor. And they're not going to hit the absolute floor.
Right.
It'd be like, hey, the Cowboys could go 5-12, and we'll get to this later in the show, but I'm kind of teasing this. Their offensive line stinks. They can't run the ball worth a darn, and they only win five games. I'd be like, look, that's the absolute floor, the worst of the worst. They're not going to hit the worst of the worst. Just like I don't think the Cowboys are going to go 15-2 and hit the best of all everything. Every draft pick works out. Everything, the chemistry is unbelievable. All of these things. I'm like, these are the ceilings and the floors. And for the offense, if you'd have told me all of these things would be happening approximately on July 4th, I would say, all right, fine. That's the floor. The likelihood of this team being a below average, being very nice with my words there, offensive team, I would say, fine, you can say that, and I will agree with you, that's the floor. What's the likelihood they hit the floor? And I would say very low. Just like the likelihood of this year, the Rangers were going to be the best offensive team in Major League Baseball history. I'd say, fine, I get it. I saw how great they were last year and what they did in the playoffs. And maybe that's likely, but like a 1% to 5% chance of likely that we're going to see the greatest offense in baseball history in 2024. But we are hitting about the floor. Like when you look at it, just to give you an example, and I know that my son has Marcus Semien on his fantasy team, and I'll be out of this here, and I have Corey Seager on my fantasy team.
Yeah.
I need to go check out Marcus Semien again, but the last I looked, Corey Seager for qualified shortstops getting points in fantasty baseball. So Josh Smith counts as a qualified shortstop just because he's played it. So it's not every shortstop. It's qualified shortstops. Corey Seager is 18th in fantasy points this year at shortstop. Last year he was, I believe, number one. I need to go back and check, but I think he was number one, even though he missed a lot of time. He just accumulated so many awesome stats. This year, right now, I know the top ones are Bobby Witt Jr. actually is number one in fantasy points. Gunnar Henderson's number two. Mookie Betts is three and keeps falling.
That's interesting.
Being out. But like, Corey Seager the other day, and he's not having a bad year, but to Corey Seager's standards, last year top one or two in fantasy points, this year 18th. Marcus Semien last year led second baseman in fantasy points. This year, I don't know. I need to go check and see if he's in the top 10.
Oof, that's not the happy broadcasting that we typically like in baseball.
And maybe
nuggets.
They can turn it around, but it's getting late early.
If they
don't turn it around in the next couple of weeks, I don't think there's enough time for them to turn it around.
And, I mean, they've got to start tonight facing off against the Rays.
Yeah.
And so,
all righties, too. Like, they didn't have a left. Like, they're not facing lefties. Like, there's so many things I thought, man, this could be a really positive homestand. And they lose the first series. Today's a new day. But, man, do they have to start figuring it out.
Yeah, we're running out of excuses. I know that we could talk about injuries, lefties, all those. But, ultimately, it's just got to win. Got to win games. It's the KNC Masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fan. A shout-out Friday out here at the Dallas Card Show. Not a lot of people asking for shout-outs. More people are trying to give us a new name for the show, where from the 214 they mentioned we can go with the A and B Masterpiece. Is Atitula and Bassett.
Okay.
So that's another one. So I guess if you... KNC Masterpiece here, live from the Dallas Card Show in Allen. I'm Reginald Atitula filling in for Kevin and Corey. Mike Bassick, of course, still here being famous. In fact, right now, I believe he is opening a box.
But Topps did a great job of cellophaning it, but I just got it open. But
you know what?
We have from our friends at RJ Dukes. We've been out at their shop before.
Mm-hmm.
And RJ Dukes, they're in McKinney, right? McKinney is the city. I always get confused because it's a little bit past Alan there, but we've done shows at their shop. They're amazing. They donate a lot to Peace-a-thon, which is the day before Thanksgiving, where we raise a lot of money for help me out here. Why am I?
My possibilities. Absolutely, yeah.
So he gave me a box of Topps Tier 1 that just came out this week. So I'm going to open it up right now. So if you're on YouTube or Twitch
That's right. Always join
us. It can be like an unbelievably great card. These are expensive. Oh, and so it's packed again.
It's like pack
upon pack. But we do need to get into baseball nuggets.
Let's do that right now.
Is it brought to you by Twin Peaks? Eats, drinks, and scenic views?
I believe so.
Even if it isn't, it is now.
That's right.
Twin Peaks, you just got free advertising.
Shout out to Twin Peaks,
or you did pay for it, and I rightfully said it.
Woo!
Okay, so in this Topps Tier 1 pack, real quick, we'll see congratulations, autograph card of... J.J. Bleday.
Okay.
An autograph card of J.T. Real Muto. These are like all unbelievable cards because here is a patch of Cody Bellinger. And then the last card is a card numbered 4 of 25 of our own Corey Seager.
There you go.
So very cool pack right there. Let me get into baseball nuggets.
Did we win?
It's a solid pack, but these are expensive. Topps Tier 1 are expensive for four cards.
They look like quality cards. They've got a certain thickness to them.
So we wanted Hopium after beating Baltimore on the road, and then you win against San Diego 7-0 their first game. You're like, this is it. This is our championship team. We're about to make the turnaround that you need because you got to get to close to 500 by the All-Star break. And then July 3rd and July 4th, you don't win. Yesterday, I thought Max Scherzer had a really good game. But it's amazing because when you lose 3-1, I had a couple questions. I was at my in-laws in Glen Rose. Shout out to Squaw Valley Golf Course. I played on July 3rd, the afternoon out there. It was super hot, but the course was in good shape. I don't know what Max Scherzer could have done better, except he had to throw a no-hitter. Like, what could have Max done? Because they were like, oh, how is Max? And I was like, well, he gave up a few runs, but, you know, he pitched into the seventh inning, this and that. And it's like, dang. And I'm like, well, a lot of times right now at the Rangers, we thought they were coming out of an offensive slump. And it was just, yesterday was just one game. Today could be a new game.
Right.
And maybe offensively they get going in. But this has been all year. You kind of expect 1-3 runs from the Rangers. That's my expectation, is if they score over 3, they've had a good offensive game. I'm just being honest with watching the Rangers this year. If they get to 4 runs, I feel like they've had a above-average 2024 offensive game.
And that's frustrating because I thought that maybe you had broken out of it. I mean, some of this was just like various folks having slumps. But when you have the Orioles in Baltimore and you put up 11 runs, you know, scoring multiple runs in multiple innings. It's not like you had one giant inning. It's not like it was just home runs. You ran the gamut, and then you backed it back up, you know, after a day off. You start off against the Padres, and you give them, you know, you get some runs there as well in a similar fashion. So it felt like they were finding something that ultimately just didn't carry on, and that was really frustrating for me.
We want it so bad as fans right now. We want this team to play like we saw them play last year, and when we get that 2 days in a row of them playing like it, we think we're about to see it for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And then you get the next two games, you lose another series. Like, this is a constant when you look at what is happening. The Padres are a solid team. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. I think the Padres will fight for a playoff spot. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. They won't win that division. But you just look at it and you go, dang, like, at what point are they going to turn it around? Because I know I'm going to Yogi Berra here, but it's getting late early.
Yeah.
We're running out of time. At this point, I know, hey, there's more games. I can talk like a baseball player too, but I'm going to talk like a fan here. You're running out of time. Time is not on your side anymore. In fact, I was shocked when Kevin 2 days ago had the article from Evan Grant that this is the third worst kind of defense of a
third worst record for a championship
champion
team. Yeah.
In baseball. And like, I didn't know it was that bad.
In the last 120 years of the World Series, this is the third worst record of a team in the next year. And so, yeah, that's the frustrating part, is that you've seen them play at a high level with largely the same guys. And, I mean, some of the guys that you trust to be, you know, kind of your stable foundation pieces aren't even having a good time. Yeah. Marcus Semien got the night off, which is something that he rarely does. But if you look at you know, some of the what he's slashing, especially if you use as a particular point May 18th.
Oh, yeah.
What happened May 18th? Semien goes out into shallow right field and happens to kind of collide with Adolis Garcia. Since then, he's been batting 179. I mean, on base percentage 262, slugging 258. Like, that's a guy that you lead off with and that you depend on to be part of that offense, and he hasn't been all that great of late.
Yeah, and this reminds me of this Marcus Semien we've been watching for a month now. It was about 2 months when he signed with the Texas Rangers that this was the Marcus Semien
saw. Yeah.
For his first 2 months as a Texas Ranger. Now, he ended up breaking out of that and ended up still having a pretty good year in the end, but right now, it's just, if this team doesn't get hot, I hate saying this, they're pretty much going to be dead by the All-Star break. If they cannot, you just can't. Right now, they're lucky because of the division. They are very lucky because the Mariners are 7 games over 500
and
leading the division.
They've been leaking a little bit here recently, too.
Now, the Astros are 3 games over 500. You're 6 behind the Astros. You're 8 behind the Mariners. Now, if I just stop there, this is where we can fool people. This is where you can make numbers do what they want to do. And it's a basic number. I'm not making up their 8 behind and 6 behind these two teams. But when you say, you can make up 6 games. You can make up 8 games with, you know, 70-something to go. That is correct, 100%. When you're 39-48, you can't. You have to start winning.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you're 48-39, if you're having a year, let's say like the Boston Red Sox. Now, do I think the Red Sox are going to catch Baltimore or the Yankees? I do not. But when you're 47-39 and you're the Boston Red Sox and you're in third place and you are 5.5 back of the Yankees and you're 7.5 back of the Orioles, there's a lot more confidence in that clubhouse with the Boston Red Sox because they've won 8 more games than they've lost. When you're the Texas Rangers and you've lost 9 more games than you've won, there's a different confidence level. And so the Rangers are struggling. The way I watch them play right now, I think, gosh, are they struggling to believe that they can do it?
Mm.
Is there too much pressure? In a weird way, do they feel almost too much pressure to defend the title? And I will say it this way. I remember Mike Piazza got on a plane. We had just played the Montreal Expos in early to mid-September, and we won the series, and the guys were getting on the plane happy, and Piazza was pissed because he had just been in the World Series in 2000, and they had made moves for Mo Vaughn and Robbie Alomar, and you know, it wasn't working out. We were under 500, not playing well, and then all of a sudden we had about a 5-game stretch where we played well. We were pretty much eliminated from the playoffs. It was impossible to make the playoffs. And he's like, he got on the plane and he got mad and he yelled at the team. He said, where were you when it mattered? Anybody can hit when nothing's on the line.
Yeah.
anybody can put up zeros when nothing's on the line. When everything was on the line in August, you guys sucked. And so I'm talking about Mike Piazza there. And I remember being a, you know, I say a kid. I was a rookie pretty much on that plane and taking it all in and, like, seeing our team leader or one of our team leaders really ticked off that all of a sudden the guys, the pressure was off.
Yeah.
Nobody cared anymore about our season. Football season was happening. We were out of the playoff race. We weren't going to win a division. We weren't going to win, at the time, the one wild card spot. And he was just mad that, why couldn't you guys played like this when it mattered? And it was amazing to me when, especially veteran guys, know the pressure's off.
Yeah.
There's no playoff position on the line. There's no defense of anything, defending a title or a division or anything. He felt like all of a sudden the guys finally started playing like they played, and he wanted to call them out on, like, hey, you needed to play this way in August when we had a chance. And because we played so bad in August, we had no chance in September. So I look at the Rangers and I wonder, I don't know, I'm not part of the team. I get to see the guys. I'm rooting for the Texas Rangers tremendously. I want them to get out of this funk. I want to have important September baseball. But I just wonder, is there too much pressure on – are they putting so much pressure on themselves that they can't get out of their own way at times and have the at-bats that I know they're capable of having?
I'd also be super interested to hear what this friend of ours would think as he texted in. His name is Derek Holland. I think you're familiar with him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know how much he's joking with this because I know that it's something that we talk about, but the idea of the Bochy effect, right? Winning one year, losing the next. But
He did play over 500 two out of those 3 years, his team, not himself. But his team's – because I wanted to look that up a month or so ago to be like, is this common? Because I knew they didn't make the World Series the next year.
Right.
But 1 year they did play like six games. I'm going off the top of my head, like six or seven games under 500. And then the other 2 years they were over 500. They just didn't have enough wins to make the playoffs or to make the run at the World Series.
Yeah, going back, you were mentioning, like, you know, the idea of being able to chase down the lead in your division. And you likened it, or you kind of compared it to the Red Sox, who are currently, you know, playing – their win percentage is 54%, 55% in there?
54.7.
With the Rangers, or with the Red Sox in that instance, right, you know that you're playing good baseball, that the field can fall to you.
Yeah, if we keep playing this way, we got a chance.
Right. The Rangers are playing 448 baseball right now. I mean, I did a little quick math, and I'm not Kevin Hagelin, so give me a little bit of leeway if I'm wrong here. But on this pace, with this win percentage, the Rangers would win 73 games this year. And so, like, that doesn't even feel befitting of the team that they are. And what's even more frustrating about this, Mike, for me is, and someone on the text line pointed to this, the bullpen has been pretty solid for you. I mean, all things considered, compare it to last year. Your starting pitching has been good. Some of the places where you had issues last year are not the same places where you had issue. And the strength that you had last year is now the thing that's plaguing you. That's the thing that almost makes me pull out my hair at times.
You know, you saying that, I was thinking about this the other day. So now I get to say it on the air because I have a lot of things that I think about and then forget to say on the air. Is if you would have told me all of these things – were to happen in the first 3 months of the season, offense, just specifically on the offense, I'd say, all right, so that's the floor. That's the absolute floor. And they're not going to hit the absolute floor.
Right.
It'd be like, hey, the Cowboys could go 5-12, and we'll get to this later in the show, but I'm kind of teasing this. Their offensive line stinks. They can't run the ball worth a darn, and they only win five games. I'd be like, look, that's the absolute floor, the worst of the worst. They're not going to hit the worst of the worst. Just like I don't think the Cowboys are going to go 15-2 and hit the best of all everything. Every draft pick works out. Everything, the chemistry is unbelievable. All of these things. I'm like, these are the ceilings and the floors. And for the offense, if you'd have told me all of these things would be happening approximately on July 4th, I would say, all right, fine. That's the floor. The likelihood of this team being a below average, being very nice with my words there, offensive team, I would say, fine, you can say that, and I will agree with you, that's the floor. What's the likelihood they hit the floor? And I would say very low. Just like the likelihood of this year, the Rangers were going to be the best offensive team in Major League Baseball history. I'd say, fine, I get it. I saw how great they were last year and what they did in the playoffs. And maybe that's likely, but like a 1% to 5% chance of likely that we're going to see the greatest offense in baseball history in 2024. But we are hitting about the floor. Like when you look at it, Just to give you an example, and I know that my son has Marcus Semien on his fantasy team, and I'll be out of this here, and I have Corey Seager on my fantasy team.
Yeah.
They're not – I need to go check out Marcus Semien again, but the last I looked, Corey Seager for qualified shortstops getting points in fantasy baseball. So Josh Smith counts as a qualified shortstop just because he's played it. So
he's
it's not
enough,
every
yeah.
shortstop. It's
right.
qualified shortstops. Corey Seager is 18th in fantasy points this year at shortstop. Last year he was, I believe, number one. I need to go back and check, but I think he was number one, even though he missed a lot of time. He just accumulated so many awesome stats. This year, right now, I know the top ones are Bobby Witt Jr. actually is number one in fantasy points. Gunnar Henderson's number two. Mookie Betts is three and keeps falling.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Being out. But, like, Corey Seager the other day, and he's not having a bad year, but to Corey Seager's standards, last year top one or two in fantasy points, this year 18th. Marcus Semien last year led second baseman in fantasy points. This year, I don't know. I need to go check and see if he's in the top 10.
Oof, that's not the happy broadcasting that we typically like in baseball.
And maybe they
can
turn it around, but it's getting late early.
If they
don't turn it around in the next couple of weeks, I don't think there's enough time for them to turn it around.
And, I mean, they've got to start tonight facing off against the Rays.
Yeah.
And so,
all righties, too. Like, they didn't have a left. Like, they're not facing lefties. Like, there's so many things I thought, man, this could be a really positive homestand. And they lose the first series. Today's a new day. But, man, do they have to start figuring it out.
Yeah, we're running out of excuses. I know that we could talk about injuries, lefties, all those. But, ultimately, it's just got to win. Got to win games. It's the KNC Masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fan. A shout-out Friday out here at the Dallas Card Show. Not a lot of people asking for shout-outs. More people are trying to give us a new name for the show, where from the 214 they mentioned we can go with the A and B Masterpiece. It's Atitula and Bassett.
Okay.
So that's another one. So I guess if you guys want to rename the show, go ahead and text those in as well. 877-881-1053 The Fan. And then The Fan threw that on at the end. Coming up next here on The Fan, let's talk about your Dallas Mavericks, right? We know, I think, what the starting lineup will look like. But in those minutes where there's no Luka or where there's no Kyrie, what could those lineups look at? We'll talk about that next on The Fan.